Movies and Booze. I'm Moncrief.
With Marks and Spencer.
On News Talk.
Chris Wasser, Linda Coogan and Fionnuala Jones join us once again for some Movies and Booze and other things. Good afternoon, to you all.
Hi, guys.
Linda, what are we going to be talking about today?
Portuguese wines.
Okay.
Yeah, a lot of underrated and unexplored regions and grapes from Portugal. So I have two crackers for you.
Okay, fantastic. And Chris, like, it's weird because it's like one's a brand new film and one is... Was this one, the Billy Connolly one, lying on a shelf and they just forgot about it? Or
I think it was like at the bottom of a box. Yeah, Big Banana Feed it's called. And made in 1975, supposed to be released in 1976. And then it was just buried then for decades, but found and restored by the British Film Institute. So we're going to be looking at, it's basically an account of Billy Connolly's Irish tour in 1975. He had done a massive British tour and then he decided to do a gig in Dublin and a couple of nights in Belfast. Mm. And this is at the height of the Troubles. So he's coming over to Dublin. All these journalists are saying to him, why are you going up the road and have you not been watching the news? And so it covers all of that. It's got a little bit of a fly on the wall tour diary, but also a bit of a concert feature. So there's lots in it. And also documenting a legend in the making, because at that point he was still a comic singer rather than rather than a fully fledged stand up.
Yeah.
So that's one, and then the other one is brand new.
Well, when you say brand new,
I mean it's also part of a franchise that's been going for 60 years as well. Where it's the latest Planet of the Apes film, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Takes a while to say that.
Yeah, it does say that,
and it doesn't really make any sense. Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes.
Yeah, because that implies there's a planet, but there's a larger kingdom which should have more than one planet.
Yeah, they're greedy.
It's syntactically,
it's not
dubious.
It's incorrect. It's the latest. It's part of the reboot saga that started in 2011. The Planet of the Apes franchise has not been rebooted again. This is a continuation.
Yeah.
But it's a continuation without the reboot players. So you haven't got Andy Serkis on board as Caesar. You haven't got Matt Reeves because he's gone on to, you know, manage Batman. So it's a whole new team, but it's continuing the story. So going into it, a bit skeptical.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's just like monkeys now,
just
or
monkeys.
Apes now.
Yeah.
Are the people gone? Or?
Most of them, yeah. Yeah. Most of them are gone. It is Planet. I mean, I don't know why they didn't just call it Planet of the Apes because there's no people. And we'll get into actually why that's a bit of a problem. But it is just monkey. It's a whole lot of monkey business.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they drive cars and have mobile phones.
They haven't figured that out yet. No.
Have Netflix subscriptions.
No, I was actually astonished at the things that they have figured out in this film. But I was like, but you still don't have television. Yeah. They're on their way, though. They're getting there.
They're getting there. Yeah. Okay. Well, maybe they'd be better off without television.
Maybe.
Really, if they have the option.
They're learning how to read.
And then what'll happen in, like, the ninth film in a row, they will have television and they'll be watching reboots of old movies that involve humans.
Yeah.
And going, God, can they not come up with an original idea in A.P. Wood? There's a lot of news to get through, but we always well start with the baby reindeer that was on last night. If people don't know, Martha, who is the character that the woman in Baby Reindeer, or the real Martha, I suppose, did this interview with Piers Morgan.
Now, they're saying that, Richard Gadd has not confirmed that it's her. Internet sleuths seem to have put together that the timelines fit and all that jazz. So obviously she goes on to Piers Morgan wanting to clear her name. She claims Baby Reindeer was essentially a work of fiction, that it's defamatory, said she'd be willing to go to court over it. It's not, it's a really, I wouldn't have watched it, only be recovering it for this. Like, it's a really uncomfortable watch, and I think the whole idea of her being interviewed in the first place is just, it kind of, it boggles the mind, to be honest.
Yeah, but I think, now as I say, I only saw clips, but even if you look at a clip and you've seen Baby Reindeer, you go, oh my God, that is the woman, because the depiction, the similarities, just in the way she carries herself and speaks, it's just uncanny.
Yeah, Fiona Garvey is the woman's name, and she's talking about having, like, she has multiple phones, multiple email addresses. She likes, and Piers Morgan questions her on that, like, why would you need multiple phones? Her, like, explanation is that she likes to keep separate people on separate phones, claims she'd only kind of met Richard Gadd in passing, like, corroborated his story of that, like, they have met, he did work in that pub, she did go to that pub. They had banter. She had exchanged a handful of emails, I think is the quote she'd used. She completely refuted the number that Piers put to her, which was in the tens of thousands, as we saw in the fictionalised version of the show on Netflix. She put it all down to, like, kind of banter, whatever, and basically said that Richard Gadd is a fraud, essentially, is what she is kind of the claim that she levels against him.
Yeah, but she did, as I understand it, just contradict herself every 5 minutes.
Yeah, it's a bit, look, it's a very contradictory email, and like, look, I'm not one to compliment Piers Morgan, but he doesn't let her get away with anything in terms of putting stuff back to her and, you know, kind of saying, you're saying these emails don't exist, that the rest of the emails that you didn't send her, that it's a fantastical number. Like, that would be very easy to pull up or like bring to a court of law or bring to police. Like, that information is very easily accessible. None of that seemed to kind of faze her. She just said, like, not true, just totally, and is very like offended by the portrayal, seemed to take huge issue with the actor's portrayal of her, if it is her. And yeah, I mean,
and it's uncanny. No, I mean, she was shown a clip of the actress who plays her speaking in her own accent and then said she doesn't sound Scottish at all. And he had to point out, no, that's an actor.
Yeah, she claims she hasn't seen the show, but like people have informed her of how the show depicts her.
Apparently on her Facebook page she's put up pictures of herself watching the show.
Yeah, I mean, The thing is though,
we're probably adding to this, that interview last night is, because she's obviously not well.
Mm.
She's profoundly not well and never got any help. I don't know if she was prosecuted over the Gard case or what happened after that.
She says she wasn't, and as far as I'm aware, like, it's, again, spoilers for anyone who hasn't watched, but like, the real life ending is not like true to the fictionalised version that you see on Netflix. Yeah, I don't know. But then it brings up this conversation again of like, should the characters have been fictionalised more? Yes, it's Richard Gadd's story. Yes, he has ownership over it. Yes, it's very important that something like this was told, especially from a male perspective. But I mean, if you look at Fiona Garvey and you look at the character Martha, I think other things could have been changed there. I don't even take issue with him starring as himself in the Baby Ranger story. I think it's really important that he took that ownership over the story because it's so personal and so horrific what happened. But at the same time, it made it very easy for people to kind of put
track her
together.
Down.
Even
him
being like, can you please not do this? That's not the point of the show, which it isn't the point of the show, but it was never going to stop people playing detective and trying to be like, pretending, I'm doing air quotes, nobody can see this, but oh, we're doing the right thing in finding out who did it and unveiling the real person, when it was all just kind of virtual signaling. I'm, you know, when it's just nosiness, like, it was nosiness.
Oh, no, absolutely. Well, I suppose that was bound to happen no matter how many precautions he took, that someone probably would have found some way to. The thing is, though, that notwithstanding that, Piers Morgan interview last night, and we're talking about, and therefore perpetuate, was a totally grubby piece of exploitation.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Yeah, like, we're giving it a lot of airtime. I haven't watched it. I don't really want to be. Yeah, I don't know. It's
just the clips. I was all I could stomach.
I think people would have enjoyed the show if they hadn't known, or if it hadn't been inspired by true events.
That's true.
Yeah. I don't think anyone would
watch it. Yeah. It's almost a degree of voyeurism.
Oh, yeah.
Really.
Yeah.
Then again, like, is he exploiting a story by having created the thing in the first place?
I mean, yeah, but it's his own story. And I do feel like he kind of acknowledges that and how the story is. Like, he doesn't come across very well in the story either.
No, he doesn't. No, that's true.
He acknowledges that and is very, like, takes the responsibility of that. But then I don't know what people expected when you're bringing it to. There's a big difference between a one-man show, which is what Baby Reindeer started out as, where he's acting opposite a stool. Like, there is no Martha character. The stalker is played by a stool on a stage, in comparison to a show that's going to a massive streamer that everyone has an account for. You know, it's... I don't know.
Yeah, I suppose he probably couldn't. Well, given what kind of comedian he was before, he shouldn't really pass up any, you know, career opportunities. Because comedy wasn't the way forward for him. One texter says, watch the interview this morning. Once they started, I couldn't stop. It was car crash, but also so accurate to the TV show. And someone else says, the fact that she was interviewed is a joke. As a female victim of abuse, if my male abuser was given a platform of an interview, it would have killed me. Which is, good point. Then again, at the same time, in this is maybe slightly different in that he went public first, you know, and I guess kind of has made a career out of it to a certain extent, really. On a lighter note, the bear is coming back.
Yes! Yeah. Yeah. I'm so excited! We have a date. It's June 27th, all 10 episodes of season 3. And we are getting them at the same time over here, because that was the issue with the past two seasons, was that America was getting them first and we were having to wait a little while longer to get them on Disney+. But they're all going to be on Disney+. June 27th. I'm so excited.
And I haven't seen the trailer, but the trailer is kind of like the bear's coming back. Bye!
The trailer gives nothing away, but like, this doesn't really give anything away for the rest of the season either, but like at the end of season two, like Carmy's locked in a freezer. So this teaser confirms he got out of the freezer, thank God. They didn't Lara Croft the butler him into the freezer. He's out.
We'll just serve him for dinner. Yeah. They find him in the freezer.
Turns into the menu,
That would be extra. Right, let's have a drink to take our minds off things.
Well, actually, speaking of a lighter note, this isn't a light Portuguese white wine. It's actually quite a rich, full-bodied, complex white wine. Usually they're known for their Vino Verdes, the light, the spritzy, you know, literally sunshine in a glass. This is the opposite. This is a wine from the Alentejo region, which makes really premium quality wines. It has spent 75% of the must is in stainless steel tanks, so you don't get any extra notes from the flavours or anything like that, but they spend 25% in new French and American oak barrels. That's where you get your, which we're saying, Fionnuala, the creamy, toasty vanilla notes from.
It stays in your mouth for ages.
I adore this wine. I think this is such an amazing example of a really quality textured wine that has loads of, I haven't even tasted it yet. I had it earlier on before we came in, but and this wine is so premium quality that it would rival, I think, a Burgundy, which is Chardonnay grape that has, just so expressive. It has apricot, it has peach, it's got the stone fruit, it has vanilla, and oh my God, I just adore this wine. It's 13.5% alcohol. It's between 20 and 25 euro in good independence. 64 wines, McHugh's, Wine Online, Pinto's, Baggot Street, and a lot of them are available online as well. But for me, yes, could you drink the bottle by itself? Well, probably not, because it's the taste lingers like that. It's quite rich. But if you've got a really hearty meal, I know it's not the time of year, but like a lobster bisque or something like that, or like barbecue chicken, something kind of roasted or really, really with a creamy risotto, something like that is unreal.
Yeah. And tell us again the part of Portugal that comes from, because I suppose people that know the Douro Valley.
Exactly.
Yeah,
we're going to do a Douro Red, which is kind of what people know. It's called Alentejo, and basically it covers a third of Portugal, but it only has a small area of vineyards, and they really concentrate on premium quality. So this is from 20-year-old vines. So it's really the roots of the vines dig deep into the soil to get great nutrients. And it just shows the length is just linger, isn't it?
Yeah.
Esperão Reserva Branco is white in Portuguese, but they have different levels. They've got like one that's my 15 and 18. This for me is by far and away the most exciting and complex. But the opposite of Vino Verde, which is what you want on a sunny day like today.
Yeah.
But there's so much excitement from Portugal.
Yeah. Linda, that's delicious. Well done. Well done for opening that bottle.
My pleasure.
What film would you like to do first, Chris?
We'll do the Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Kingdom there's no way to say that.
Apes with no telly coming up after this.
In their time, humans were capable of many great things.
Noah!
They could fly like eagles fly. They could speak across oceans. But now it is our time. And it is my kingdom. We will learn. I will learn. And I will conquer.
Okay, if you say so. That's Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes there. Man, humans used to fly like eagle. Cracking bit of dialogue there. So as we established already, there are no. How far in the future after the original story, or do we have any idea?
Yeah, we're 300 years between War for the Planet of the Apes, which was 2017. That story 300 years ago. So basically, it is the Planet of the Apes,
right? Okay.
And look, as I said, going into this, I thought we don't really need another Planet of the Apes film, because if you look at Rise of the Planet of the Apes, Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, and War for the Planet of the Apes, all released between 2011, 2017. That to me is about as perfect a film trilogy as you can get. The films got better as they went along, and the story was great. The cast was always very impressive. The motion capture technology was just sensational. Andy Serkis was just fantastic as, like, you know, the original intelligent chimp Caesar. And for the uninitiated, the story is basically that a man-made virus in the first film, created in a lab at first to you have scientists trying to come up with a cure for Alzheimer's, and this cure gets out into the real world and it actually develops into a virus, a pandemic unfolds, and for whatever reason this virus robs humans of their voice and their intellect, but it makes chimpanzees clever. And Caesar is the first one. He's actually the pet of a scientist, and, you know, he makes his mates clever, and long story short, the apes take over the world. And in the second film you have the survivors who are immune to the virus kind of setting up a war with the chimps, and, you know, they've lost family and they're quite angry about their planet being taken, as you would be. And the third one, we got an all-out war. It was pretty much Apocalypse Now. You know, you have Woody Harrelson but you have Woody Harrelson in full-on Marlon Brando mode.
You should have called it that.
You should have. But to me, that you had a complete story there, and also a big spoiler, Caesar dies at the end of the third one. So the story was done, and the last shot was just like the creation of the Planet of the Apes. So with this, it seems a little greedy at first, but actually the premise is, it's not half bad. So we're 300 years in the future. We're focusing on this peaceful mountain tribe of chimps who seem to have created like this lovely picturesque community for themselves, and they bond with eagles and all of the kids. You have one kid called Noah, played by Owen Teague. He's coming up to this coming of age ceremony that involves eagle eggs and flying with the eagles. It's all very confusing and not really important. But ahead of this ceremony, their village is raided by there's this fascist basically on the shore on America's west coast who is trying to build himself a bit of an army, because he wants to open this human vault. He wants to open this army vault and avail of whatever technology and weapons are inside. So he's going around to all these ape communities and rounding up the people and burning their villages and giving them no choice, basically. He's an awful dictator, basically. So he comes in and ruins the village, and he leaves Noah for dead, but Noah is not dead. So he sets off on a quest to find his mom. Along the way, he makes some new friends who start talking about this Jesus-like figure, Caesar, who, you know, obviously he didn't meet because it's 300 years ago. And he also encounters a human that at first he names Nova, but realizes her name is May. And they think, like the rest of what's left of humans, like there are maybe thousands scattered across America, they're all like Neanderthals, but May can talk. And this just shocks the life out of him.
Right.
So they arrive at this at this shore and meet the fascist. His name is Proximus. He has kind of like misunderstood. He's learning about Roman history. And he's also learned about Caesar. And he's kind of put two and two together and gotten six. And it's bad news for everyone.
Yeah. Right. Okay. Are we at the stage? Are we at the stage in the development of ape civilization where it's close to the time where Charlton Heston actually crashes in a spaceship?
Yeah, probably. I'd say we're going to get another trilogy, and this film is going to do very well. And I think that would be a very clever way to end it, actually. So I think the director too, Wes Ball, he's been saying that it's obviously a sequel to the last one, but it's also a prequel to the original. So we might be building towards that. Look, that story works. I probably made it a bit more complicated than it sounds. The story is quite good. It's an extraordinary looking film. It really is. It's astonishing. Yeah. And I mean, some people have compared it to Avatar. I would say this. Watching the Avatar films, you're never not aware that it's an expensive cartoon.
Yeah.
You're never really immersed in it fully. With this, I felt like turning around to my colleagues and saying, are those apes talking? This is like that is just sensational looking. And it's all done with motion capture performance. So you've got Kevin Durant, you've got Owen Teague, you've got all of these great actors going around the place, you know, pretending to be monkeys, and then they're wearing those suits with the padded balls, and they're, you know, whatever computer wizardry is done afterwards, it's sensational. And also Wes Ball has been saying, when this film comes out of cinemas, make sure you pick up the physical copy on DVD and Blu-ray, because they're going to make a cut where it's just the actors, so you can watch the actors pretending to be apes. I'd love to see that, actually.
I wouldn't say be as compelling.
I still would love to see how it's done. I'd like peeking behind the curtain like that. It's a sensational looking film. The biggest problem, and it is a big one, it has a human problem in that there are hardly any. And I think the Planet of the Apes
You're so speciesist.
I think, I don't know what you were going to say.
But I think, ironically, the Planet of the Apes films, they need human antagonists, and they're, there's none really in this. I think it's an awful lot more interesting to have an ape versus humans war than an ape versus ape war. Yeah. After a while, you start to think yourself, bring Woody Harrelson back from the dead.
Let's face it, all apes look the same. Sorry to tell you.
Yeah, so it really does. It also has a runtime problem, 145 minutes.
Oh, my
That's
God.
That's a lot of monkey business.
Is there a lot of big speeches and stuff?
Or there are big speeches, yeah. There are big, huge set pieces across water on mountaintops. Visually, it's never dull. I just wanted someone to come in and just make it a little bit tighter.
Yeah.
And also, like, the set pieces are spectacular, and the fight sequences are astonishing to look at. But it's also, as I say, I'm repeating myself, but it's also fun to just watch them talk to one another.
Yeah.
I mean, they're sitting around at one stage talking about eagle eggs, and it's like, I don't know what they're doing, but this is fascinating. I went into it thinking we don't really need this, and I came out of it going, you know what, I'm glad they made that, and actually I am quite looking forward to another one, because I think it teases things. It doesn't end on the cliffhanger, but it ends on a note where it's like, okay, bring it on, let's see what's next, and I didn't expect to think that. So it's better
what's
than
what's the start on this. Can you bring kids to it?
Depends how they feel about monkeys. Yeah. I think it's a 12A.
Yeah,
and it does get a little bit dark and violent at times. So, just be cautious.
Yeah, okay. Somebody wants to know, could you say the name of the white wine again, please?
Esperão Reserva Branco. So Esporao. Okay. Esperão.
Esperão.
Sorry, can I just say as well, on the label as well, I've put it on Instagram, but I'll put it on Twitter. Every year the label changes just to confuse people.
Okay.
But it's always in this particular shape bottle, and they commission a different artist every year. So even if you find not the 2022 vintage, an older one, it is worth picking up, because this wine will keep.
Paul says, just wondering, what's the deal with decanters? Are they worth buying, and when do you actually need to use one?
Great question. I have a really fancy Patrick Ewa one that is really kind of awkward shaped, so I rarely use it. I usually use a jug from IKEA, and I just pour.
It's like your face, Patrick Ewa.
Sorry. It's just like a simple carafe that you get like in an Italian restaurant, and you just slowly pour the red wine in. Don't be greedy. Don't lash it all fully vertical into the thing, because the point is that you're trying to let the air open up and breathe to let some oxygen in, because it's trapped in the bottle. And basically it won't do any harm to any red wine, but it is useful for wines that have been aged or are big and full bodied and are closed. When you smell it first, that there isn't much of a scent, it opens it up. So you can get aerators that you can use as well. But a decanter, like, again, I wouldn't be going spending a fortune on one. Yeah. Just to let some air into the, rather than just the little hole of the, where the
okay,
cork
so,
opens.
So opening it and leaving it there for an hour wouldn't have the same effect.
No, because you're giving it more space to open up and oxygen getting into more of the wine.
Yeah.
Let it breathe.
So, well, how much is a decanter from Patrick Ewa cost?
It was a lovely gift. Okay. Not from Patrick Ewa, but...
I didn't know he did them.
Yeah, I don't know where this person got it, but it's a lovely decanter, but they can be a bit of a pain to clean, you know, at the base of it and things like that. So, Milton, the baby things that you put sterilized, that's a good thing to clean them.
Okay, there you go. Cleaning tips as well. Didn't anticipate getting that today on the show. Now, speaking of Andy Serkis, there's going to be a new Gollum movie, but is Andy Serkis going to be in it?
He's going to be in it, and he's going to direct it.
Okay.
It is The Lord of the Rings Search for Gollum, I think. Yeah, The Hunt for Gollum, excuse me. They're aiming for a 2026 release, I think, from Warner Brothers. Peter Jackson back involved. I think they're looking at this as like kind of a multi-film slate, but this film is expected to kick everything off. This is also while Amazon are kind of still doing their own thing with the Lord of the Rings universe that Peter Jackson isn't involved in at all, because they had that show,
The Rings of Power,
which I don't think people, not sure how fans really felt, but I think it was an okay show. I think it did okay, but I think the fans were kind of divided on it. That is expected to come. Yeah, they're aiming for a 2026 release date. No details on plot or anything like that.
And but is it going to be a movie or it's going to be in one of the streams?
It's going to be a movie.
And given that probably everything about Gollum we know from Lord of the Rings, how can they be searching for Gollum?
See, I'm the wrong person to ask about that, because I am not a big Lord of the Rings head.
Yeah.
I watched The Fellowship and then gave up. I said, have a nice time in Middle Earth. Enjoy your
I wish you well.
I wish you well.
I wish your hairy little feet well.
I'm sure, like, there's lore to be added or something. Yeah.
Something.
I mean,
sure, he had like his Gollum the college years or something.
Because, but didn't they that do? We know how Gollum became Gollum.
We do. We know how he became Gollum. We know that
we
he
have
had,
his whole backstory.
Yeah,
really.
He was hiding out in the cave forever, and then the lads came along. And that was pretty much it.
And that was pretty much it. So there's no additional Gollum story that they can cleave out of that, unless it's Gollum's brother or something.
Gollum had an evil twin.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, maybe that's what it is. And your squeak, like, there's like 5 minutes unaccounted for in his life.
Yeah. There you go. Here's 2.5 hours.
They got 3 films out of a children's book. Like, I think they'll probably find The Hobbit, obviously.
Yes, yes. Yeah. Yeah. But, rather than the other big, huge one. Yeah.
I think they'll probably find some story.
Yeah. Okay. All right. And that's when's that coming out?
They're aiming for 2026, but again, could be pushed out. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Right. We do have to take a break. You are listening to The Moncrief Show on Newstalk. We'll back in a couple of minutes. You are listening to The Moncrief Show on Newstalk. We're halfway through Movies and Booze. Chris Wasser, Linda Coogan and Fionnuala Jones are still with us. Someone suggests maybe it's the search for Gollum by the armies of Mordor when he found the ring. Still sounds awful. There you go. Second, they can squeeze a story in there somehow. I assume when he first found the ring, he wasn't all Gollum-y. Maybe he was just like a regular dude.
I thought he was like a regular hobbit before he...
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah. Well, there you go. Yeah. So maybe that's what it is. And this is more a publishing question. Brian wonders, will people be able to read the Sacha Baron Cohen chapter of Rebel Wilson's book despite being redacted in the UK?
You can read the book, but those excerpts are now either not included or blacked out. But like the information is very readily available via podcasts of people who read the book and are now telling you about the book. So, yeah.
Yeah. There you go, Brian. Or Brian, you can get on a plane. Fly to New York, go into a bookshop there, and you will be able to get read it there. John Malkovich is going to be in the Fantastic Four.
Yes, we've had a couple of new additions to this new Fantastic Four film that's coming out. So John Malkovich is added. His role is unconfirmed as of right now. We also have Ryan
playing John Malkovich.
I would like to see in the 60s with superheroes. Absolutely. Ralph Ineson as well, who people know from Harry Potter, and he was most recently in The First Omen, so he's going to be playing Galactus. So he's the antagonist in Fantastic Four. So he's the bad guy in this. He was actually previously seen, Galactus was seen in the 2007 Fantastic Four sequel, Rise of the Silver Surfer, but he was portrayed as like this CGI generated cloud, and people did not like that at all. Fans were not happy about that, because this Galactus is a fella, he goes around and eats the life force of planets, you know what I mean? So he needs to have a bit of
nasty
gravitas for him. So he's added to the cast. As I previously mentioned already, Julia Garner is Shalabal, like a female version of the Silver Surfer, and Paul Walter Hauser is also a part of the cast. Again, his role I think is unconfirmed, but he's joining Pedro Pascal, Vanessa Kirby, Joseph Quinn and Eben Moss-Bacharach as the titular Fantastic Four. Yeah.
Has John Malkovich just kind of given up?
Wasn't he in the BBC Agatha Christie thing there a couple of years ago? Wasn't he? Was he?
I don't know. Was he? No, I don't know. You just get whatever he's in, he's kind of phoning it in. He's being John Malkovich-y and that's it.
He was
in
Ripley, the newest, which I did not get past the first episode.
Oh, no. Right.
Sorry, Andrew Scott, I love you.
I haven't even started on that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I'm in the minority. Other people seem to really like it. I just don't think it's my bag, to be honest. But I know that's one of his most recent film credits. I'd say Marvel went to him and said, here is a bag of money. And he said, okay.
I just love these.
I just love the superheroes. I love the 60s. Yeah.
Has he been in any other superhero things?
No.
That's a good question.
He's a great voice for something like that.
He does have a great voice. Yeah.
That might be the only thing that we hear.
No,
as well.
I just feel like his best performances are some years behind him.
Yeah. Mm. Probably.
Yeah. Oh, that's a shame when that happens, really. Sad. It's just like you get the feeling he's just being in films just to get himself out of the house. Kind of thing. Anyway, 40 grand in the cash machine. Let's see, did John Malkovich pick up the phone?
Your chance to win big. News Talk's Cash Machine.
The winning continued yesterday when Mike Ryan answered our call and joined Rachel and Kieran on this week's winners list. It's a Friday afternoon. There is room on that list for one more. So let's try to make it 4 from 4 for this week. If you've entered since Mike won yesterday, you'd better check your phone. No dilly-dallying, please. You will need to answer within 5 rings. You'll also need to tell us today's winning amount.
1 ring. 2 rings.
Hello?
Hello, good afternoon. It's Barry Dunn phoning. Can you take
Oh my God.
Can you take the cash? Yeah, you know what this is about already.
Yes, I do. Oh my God. Oh my God. Is this serious?
It is serious. Who are we talking to?
Katie.
How are you, Katie?
Oh my God.
Oh my God. Where are you today, Katie?
I'm at home. I picked my two kids up from school. Planning on getting McDonald's tonight.
Oh, I would imagine so. Where are you, Katie? What part of the world?
One second, Matthew. I'm in County Wexford, Wexford town.
I would imagine that Wexford is just glorious on a day like today, is it?
It's absolutely beautiful.
Okay. This day is going to be glorious for you, Katie, I reckon.
I hope so. I really hope so.
You sound like a bag of nerves. We're nervous on your behalf now. The whole nation is nervous.
Oh my God.
Anxiety level.
I'm sitting down.
Anxiety levels through the roof here. Yeah, sit down. That's probably a good idea.
I'm shaking. Okay.
You know how it works, Katie?
I do. 40,390 euro and 71 cent.
You know what you need to do now, Katie?
Oh my God.
You need to tell your kids that their ma is a cash machine winner.
Oh my God. Oh my God. This can't be real.
Katie, it is very real. You have just emptied out the cash machine. You are our newest winner.
Oh my God, I have been entering this for so long.
If you've been entering for so long, I'm sure you have ideas. I'm sure you've got a couple of things. Is there a bucket list, Katie?
Oh my God, so many things. My sister is getting married in June. I just booked flights and everything this morning. So this, oh my God.
You know what this is, Katie? We haven't phoned you until now, but it's perfect timing that we did it today. You've done it. Relax.
Oh my God.
Take a big deep breath out now. There's nothing to worry about.
I know my children are here. I've just won a lot of money. It's life changing. It's brilliant. We might be going somewhere fancier than McDonald's for dinner tonight.
Very nice. Go and celebrate with the family in Wexford. You've done it. You've emptied out the cash machine for more than 40 grand. Well done.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Goodbye.
The winning continues on News Talk's Cash Machine. Listen to the Hard Shoulder just after 5 to hear that new cash amount, and we could be calling you.
News Talk's Cash Machine.
Quick, somebody get Katie a Valium. And congratulations to her and the family, and she'll have a great time at the wedding, no doubt. New total with Kieran on the Hard Shoulder after the 4 o'clock news. Anyway, let's move on to our red wine.
Excellent. Tell us, Linda. Okay, so I will pronounce it and I will spell it. So it is Seixo Amarelo, S-E-I-X-O Amarelo, and it's a Douro wine.
Okay.
So this is what people kind of think of when they think of Portugal. They think Douro Valley Hot, and this is a cracking little wine from there. Portugal has over 250 native indigenous grapes, so they're rarely on the labels, so don't be intimidated by that. So just try different regions and explore different styles. So the Douro is going to have more of a full-bodied style with kind of riper fruit, more rich and complex, and they can have higher alcohol as well. This is a smashing little wine that is perfect for like barbecue burgers and meat and things like that coming into summer. But it's not too heavy in alcohol. It's only 13.5%. And the grapes in it are Tarriga Nacional, Tarriga Franca, Suso, all these other grapes. It doesn't matter, okay? They're all kind of different regions and different styles from the different regions to do with the climate, you know. So on the along the coast is going to be the lighter, fresher styles. Moving more inland to Douro, you're going to have more big, rich, complex styles. Mm. So I definitely would recommend people, you know, have a little trip over to Portugal. Lots of the wines that you see over there are over here. And even in a wine shop, if you just start at like 12 euro and work your way up, you'll find different ones to work for you. It's great value. What have you tasted this yet?
Yes. I wouldn't say I call it a little wine at the same time. It kind of says hello.
So Seixo Amarelo Douro Valley DOC. So it's from a quality region. Tarriga Nacional, Tarriga Franca. For me, it has lots of summer berry fruits. Oh. And it spent 8 months in oak barrels as well.
Yeah.
225 litre French oak barrels. So that kind of makes it softer. So the tannins, it's not really, really dry. It's juicy fruit. But can you imagine that with a big kind of juicy burger.
Yeah.
Or some ribs.
Oh no, it's lovely. It's delicious. Yeah. And what's the ABV on that? And
it's only 13.5%.
Okay, all right.
And you can get it between 15 and 17 euro in various places. So Bagot Street, Cavavan in Galway, Martin's, McHugh's, Wine Online, The Vintry, Searson. So lots of stockists, cracking little wine.
Yeah. Now, when they say 13.5%, are they kind of going, oh no, definitely that's 0.5% that it might be itching towards 14, you
but
know?
With alcohol, so you can get a burn at the back of your throat if it's really high alcohol. I'm not getting any burn, I'm just getting a lovely taste. So I think it's really well balanced. I think the 13.5 would be okay.
Yeah.
But there's quite a lot going on in your mouth. You can still like an explosion of fruit though, yeah?
Mm. Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Right, we'll move on to our second movie of the day. It is Big Banana Feet. Here's a clip.
But the best examples of swearing are heard at George Square, right in the centre of town, at 12:30 at night, waiting for the last bus to Drumchapel, which is a reservation in the outskirts, you know. And you can see all these rubber men in the square. We are the people! You ever notice about a Glasgow drunk, he walks with one leg? He's usually carrying a fish supper, which looks as if it weighs about 200 weight.
Right, okay. That's of course, this is the early days.
Yeah.
So this was in 1973, 74,
this
something
is in,
like that?
1975. So
yeah, right.
He was on tour in the UK throughout 1975. And they added a Dublin date on at the end of it and then a Belfast date. And Murray Grigger and David Peace, director at the time and cinematographer, they decided to join him because they thought there might be a good story there about him doing a tour in Ireland, especially, as I said, at the height of the Troubles. Mm. So they came over with him. And there are times when it's almost as if everybody he meets and also Connolly himself forgets that the camera's there. So the whole thing is quite candid and it's also quite hazy. And as I said at the beginning, like this was a long lost film. When they finished making it, I'm not sure if it got some sort of release at some stage, but it was buried after that. And we have a chap at the BFI, the British Film Institute, to thank for stumbling upon it, spending something like 50 quid on like a 16mm print and then, you know, teaming up with the people at the BFI and restoring it.
How do you even lose a film though?
I always
bizarre.
Think that's funny. Yeah, a long lost film. If I made a film,
like 3 weeks in Ireland filming, and then they go home, wake up, and can't remember a thing. Yeah. You know,
that is what happened.
Maybe that is what happened. Yeah,
Disney and Fox had made the new Planet of the Apes, and then just lost it.
Yeah. No wonder it's a search for Gollum.
But yeah, so for a lot of people, this will be the first time. Maybe a small crowd had watched the film in 1976, but this is, you know, all these years later, its debut. So as I said, it's a bit of a fly in the wall tour diary because, you know, at times it's as if Connolly doesn't even know the crew is there, and it's also a bit of a concert feature, as you hear in the clip there, because this is at a point in his career where Super Siren was on the horizon, but he was still very much a comic singer. You know, he was very famous.
A singer?
Yeah. Folk player, a banjo player.
Because he was originally a folk singer.
Yeah.
He was on tour with all the best of them at the time, and he was actually charting very well. He was known for his folk records, but once he started going out on the road, I think the time that he would spend playing music, that started to shorten. And then the time that he would spend telling stories, that was what people were coming to him for. So actually what you were hearing there in that clip where he's talking about his school days or his childhood or life back in Glasgow, that was sandwiched in between performances. But then when he'd start the songs, you'd realise that they're almost like Billy Connolly's take on some other famous folk songs. So he would be maybe borrowing some tunes and melodies along the way. But the songs themselves are actually pretty good. Like you had songs about the four-letter word song about, you know, he doesn't want anyone to ban the F word. It just could be songs about, you know, joining the army, songs about divorce, very real stuff, but very, very funny stuff. But eventually, you know, he became, you know, better known as a stand-up. So it works as this, you know, time capsule document where, you know, you can smell the cigarette smoke off this film. it looks like a product of its time. Yeah. I loved it for that. It's hazy and it's disorganized. It's a little bit slanted, but intentionally so. So that's great. But it also works as this fascinating snapshot of a very different Ireland, where when he lands in Dublin, and especially a very different Irish media, because when he arrives at the Gresham Hotel, he says to the people around him, he says to Jamaican, is there any chance that we can do the interviews after the show, because he was kind of a little bit tired. Now, I say he was tired, but he was still polite and charming. He was tired of answering questions about his craft and about his upbringing, all of which he goes into in the shows without people having seen them. So yeah, he thought if the press come and watch it, then they'll have better questions. And he says actually at one stage they'll be able to make their own minds up and they'll be able to kind of air their own opinions rather than looking for someone else's. But they say no. So he has to answer questions from them. So you have a very young Niall Stokes nervously asking him questions about his upbringing. You have RTÉ's Áine O'Connor basically reminding him at this reception, which looks a bit awkward, of the Miami Chauvin killings just a few months beforehand. So the message there is clear that all of the journalists, they want to know about Billy Connolly, but they all want to know, why are you going up the north and are you afraid of going up the north? And he was married to his first wife at the time. They had two children. And he said that, you know, his family were actually a little bit worried about him, but he hadn't actually put too much thought into it. It seems like the first thought that he puts into it is after the Dublin gigs, when he's going to O'Connell Street, having a pint and then realizing, well, we better go. We better see what happens here.
Yeah.
What happens to him? Nothing. I mean, he actually ends up having a really good time. He flies in on private jet. When he's actually, there's a great scene where he's looking out the window and they're about to land in Belfast. And he said, you wouldn't believe such a violent place could look so pretty. He's looking out and he just thinks it's beautiful down below. And when he lands, he starts having all these comical conversations with soldiers and signing autographs for them. And when he gets to the gig, he walks out on stage and he thinks to himself, will I tell jokes about what's happening here? I won't. But he does something better. Someone throws a rose at him and he just goes, so straight away, he is breaking the ice and he's acknowledging the situation, but without kind of getting too much into it. And there's hecklers as well. They're crying out all sorts of things. I don't want to give too much of the concert feature part of it away, but he deals with them brilliantly. So, yeah. So as I said, you're getting a great snapshot of Ireland at a very different time, but also of this legend who is starting to become a superstar. I mean, maybe he didn't realise it at the time, but we're just getting him right before he became like one of the best comics in the world.
Does the comedy age well?
It's aged very well. Yeah. I mean, because he's like the songs that he was singing, like it's inherently silly stuff. And none of it is too, you know, there's a bit of risque material in there, but none of it is mean spirited. Or problematic in any way. It might sound a little bit, you know, tame compared to the stuff, and also maybe not as sharp in some of the observational stuff as what he would do later on. But I was sitting there cackling away, and
relatable as well, I suppose, because I mean, he just talks to people, and I listen to him.
Yeah.
All day.
Okay. And is that in cinemas? Is that kind of general
release? It is in selected cinemas from this weekend, and it will be on DVD actually in about 3 or 4 weeks' time. But I would say go and see it in a cinema. Yeah. It's nice to see Billy Connolly on the screen.
That sounds great. That's our lot for today. Thanks to Chris, Linda, and Fionnuala.
Movies and Booze on Moncrief
with Marks and Spencer
on News Talk.